Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Jesus and the Pharisees right after this. You know, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology, and Lyell published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe these ideas and concepts don't even know who it was that originated them. But it's from his system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out. And this process is called science. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report. And it made that surprising statement. The sun is shrinking. Now, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching now for over 100 years and measuring the sun. And the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that totals 1% per millennium. Now, if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would have been touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. But what did our teachers teach us in public school? Do you remember the dinosaurs? How they became extinct 65 million years ago? Well, now, come on. If 20 million years ago the sun would have been 93 million miles in diameter, then the Earth would have been burned up and toast, wouldn't it? So, somebody can't add and somebody can't subtract here. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this kind of math on this kind of pseudo-scientific lie. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And that's one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we conduct twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call us right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Then go to the download on the archives page. All right, we're talking about Jesus. Yeah, sweet Jesus, you know, the guy that had this bitch with the Pharisees, Jesus and the Pharisees. I took a look at how many times this word Pharisee appears in the scripture, and it looks like about, 11 times that we see the word Pharisees, and the word, or Pharisee rather, singular, and about 86 times we see it in the plural. That's more than one Pharisee, more than one preacher in the same location. looked up words like Jew. For instance, the word Jew is a descendant of Judah. Judah was one of the patriarchs. He was the guy who was a son of Leah and Jacob. Now, I know for most of you, you're probably sitting there saying, well, I don't know much about these genealogies, and, well, it all seems kind of a waste of time. Well, it would be a waste of time unless you knew what you were looking for. And in this case, what we're looking for is, if we're looking for a guy who has usurped your identity. That's right. Somebody came along and stole your identity, and we're trying to identify that guy. And so, in international geopolitics, this has been going on for a long time. It started back in the 6th century, and there was a group of people called the Khazars. These Khazars lived between the Caspian and the Dead Sea. They're not dead. Black Sea. Caspian and Black Sea. They were a buffer between the Islamic world and the Christian world, and they were proselytes. They took on, the Khazar people took on Judaism as the official religion of their kingdom. And for about 600 years, they profited from both the Christians and from the Muslims. Genghis Khan comes down out of the steppes of Russia and conquers them. They flee and they end up in Poland. That's where the modern Khazar Jews, we call them Talmudic Jews, Khazar Jews, that are described by Arthur Koestler in his book, The 13th Tribe. Now what we're trying to do is to figure out, what does the Bible say about that? Well, in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, we found out that they're imposters. And they stole our identifying sign, the Sabbath. So when you ask the real Jews, the descendants from Judah, are you a Jew? They say, no, no, I'm a Christian. Then you go to these Jews that are the imposters and say, are you a Jew? They say, yeah, we're the chosen people. And you know that because we keep the Sabbath. So they've got the Sabbath sign. So here they're practicing one of the laws, one of those Ten Commandments. They're practicing the Sabbath, and we Christians over here aren't. They got us practicing Sunday. So we lost our identifying sign. Now that's going to come to a no good end for us, because, you know, we're in violation of the law, and in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, God said, if you break my law, you violate my covenant, here's what I'm going to do with you. God doesn't have a covenant with the Khazars. He's got a covenant with us. He's got a deal with us. They're not in breach of contract. The Jews are sitting over here. They're not in breach of contract. We are. And here we are. We should be the people calling ourselves Jews, practicing the Sabbath with our identifying sign. We threw it away. You know, like our credit card number? We were careless with our credit card number and threw it away. And they came along and said, hey, look at this. Hey, I got these guys' number. I got these guys' identifying sign. Now let's go collect the benefits. And they are. They just collected Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup. They just collected $15 trillion from you. They've got your identifying sign. Well, okay, boys and girls. Now let's take a look at this guy and see where'd he come from. And how did he do this? To help us answer this question of who is Esau Edom, the first necessary step is to examine the racial and genealogical history of Esau and his descendants. So let's take a look at the life and the history of this fellow named Esau. Esau was the firstborn son of Isaac, and thus was heir to the birthright derived from the direct racial lineage of Adam to Noah, to Abraham. Esau was racially an Adamite. He is a Semite, and he is a Hebrew. He is of the racial stock of the white race. So when Jews walk in the door, most of them, you know, appear to be white, Hebrews, Semitic, and they are. Isn't that special? Well, just as Esau despised his birthright, as we see in Genesis 25:34, when he sold it to Jacob, he also despised his race by marrying strange women outside of his race. Esau married the daughters of Canaan, or Canaanites, in Genesis 28, verse 6. Genesis 36, verse 2, the daughters of Heth, or the Hittites. In Genesis 26, 34, the daughters of Ishmael, the daughters of the Hivites, and he had intermarried with the Horites. These interracial marriages were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. Esau's parents, remember, in Genesis 26:35. The descendants of Esau from these marriages became known as Edomites, or as Edom, in Genesis 36, verses 1 and 9. These interracial marriages were a grief of mind to Rebekah and Isaac. He was an adult, that's what he wanted to do. He went out and broke the law, he knew what he was doing. And because of that, he was disinherited. Disinherited. And God proposed that he was going to give the birthright to Jacob. Now, the problem was that Jacob, instead of waiting and being patient until God delivered it to him, he conspired with his mother to steal it from Esau. He wanted it. And he went out and he cheated his brother Esau out of it. These are the Edomites. This is Uncle Esau. He's alive and well in the world today. His descendants are here. And they have not forgotten. I suspect that what would have happened if Jacob had been patient, Esau would have gotten killed in a hunting accident, and that would have been the end of it. But no. Our father Jacob, he couldn't wait. He had to steal it. And so he did. And it's a grief now to all of us. Now Esau and the Edomites dwelled in Mount Seir in Genesis 36, verses 8 and 9, which God gave to Esau for a possession. You see that in Deuteronomy 2, verse 5, and Joshua 24, 4. The land was also known as Edomia. In Isaiah 34, verse 6, the land of Edom, Mount Seir, lied south of the Dead Sea, stretching south to its seaport at Eliath, and included the ravine known as Petra. After the conquest of Judah by the Babylonians, some of the Edomites who had mixed with the Jews in their land resettled with them in Judea. Two centuries later, all of Edom was driven out of Mount Seir. The Edomites were driven from Petra westward by the Nabatheans in 312 B.C., and before the middle of the 2nd century B.C., they were occupying not only southern Judah, but also Hebron and the country to its north as far as Bethzur. Now, the Nabatheans now occupy Mount Seir, and the Edomites were driven into the old territory of Judah. The Maccabean family had ruled Judah from 166 to 37 B.C., and under Judah Maccabee, recaptured the city of Hebron from the Edomites in 164 B.C., and a decisive change in the relations between these two factions took place when Judah Maccabee's son, John Hyrcanus, confronted the Edomites. John Hyrcanus conquered the whole of Edom and undertook the forced conversion of its inhabitants to Judaism. Josephus, Antiquities of the Jews, chapter 13, page 9. Thenceforth, the Edomites became a section of the Jewish people. Thus, at this juncture of time, the Edomites were incorporated with the Jewish nation, and their country was called by the Greeks and Romans Edomia. You'll see that in Mark 3, verse 8. So now we find that 100 years before the time of Christ, the area of Judea or southern Palestine was inhabited by the Maccabeans and Edomites, who both were followers of Judaism. Herod the Great, from 74 to 4 BC, the king of Judea, was an Edomian, or an Edomite, and his wife, Miriam, was a Maccabean. This area had such a large number of Edomites at the time of Christ that it's called Edomia, in Mark 3, verse 8. During Titus's siege of Jerusalem from 66 to 70 A.D., the Edomites participated in its defense against the Romans. Immediately before the siege of Jerusalem, 20,000 Edomians appeared before Jerusalem to fight in behalf of the Zealots who were besieged in the temple. More than a million inhabitants of Judea died, and 97,000 were taken captive. An unknown number had fled either before or during the siege. This is the last mention of the Edomites as a people or nation in history. And yet, Bible prophecy indicates that Edom would be an enemy of Israel in the latter days. And we find that their only connection to a present-day people and religion is with the Jews and Judaism. So we thus need to trace back the origin of the Jews to see who they are. Now, the Jews of today fall within two main types. They're called Sephardic and Ashkenazi. The Sephardim are also known as Spanish Jews and constitute about 5% of the Jews in the world. The Ashkenazim are the East European Jews, which were found in Poland, Russia, and Germany, and Western Asia. This group of Jews make up about 90% of the so-called Jews in the world. Many reference and historical sources have unequivocally identified the bulk of the Ashkenazi Jews, which were derived from the people known as Khazars. The original Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905 revealed the origin of the Jews from an Asiatic people known as Khazars, K-H-A-Z-A-R-S and C-H-A-Z-A-R-S. Notice where this comes from. It's the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905. Now, as time progresses along, remember that people oftentimes, if they want to deceive you, and they don't want you to know something, they don't write it, they don't repeat it, and it drops out of history. So let me tell you about Arthur Koestler again. He wrote the book here called The 13th Tribe. He's a Jew. And he said, let me tell you about the Khazars, and that's what this story is about, the Khazar Empire and its heritage. Let's see where you can get this. Why don't you try, write this down. Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, Koestler, K-O-E-S-T-L-E-R. That's the author. The book is called The 13th Tribe. Why don't you go down to Barnes & Noble and try it there, and try it at your local bookstore. Try it at a used bookstore by plugging it into the computer, and if all else fails, then go here to bravenewbookstore.com. Get online, bravenewbookstore.com, Austin, Texas. Telephone. Telephone numbers, 512-480-2503. All right, now that'll get you the book, and that'll tell you about the Khazars. Now, the Jewish Encyclopedia tells us a great deal. They give us the same information. In fact, there's a map here. I'm reading here from The Legacy of Esau, Edom, written by Charles A. Wiseman. You can also get that from bravenewbookstore.com. At least I'm pretty sure you can. Here's a phone number in here. You might be able to find Wiseman himself. It's 612-890-0202. I got a second number in here, 612-952-0202. And here's an address, 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D. That's 11751 West River Hills Drive, R-I-V-E-R-H-I-L-L-S, all one word, Drive. Number 107D. In Burnsville, Minnesota, and the zip code is 55337. That's about 100 pages here, isn't it? Let me take a look here. About 125 pages. and well written, well documented. Got the scriptural references in here. Tells you the story about the Khazars. Now remember, in the scripture we find in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, two places here. There are some people here calling themselves Jews, which are not, but do lie. There's four lines of Jews. Three of them aren't lying. One of them is. The one that's in control, the Talmudic Jews, those are the ones, that one branch over there. The people that represent guys like Henry Kissinger, well, I'll give you the list. Here are the Khazars. Henry Kissinger, Sigmund Freud, Henry Morgenthau, Karl Marx, Jack Benny, George Burns, Mary Amsel Rothschild, David Rockefeller, Madeleine Albright, Leon Trotsky, Nikolai Lenin, Dianne Feinstein, Joe Lieberman, Louis Brandeis, Alina Kagan, our new justice on the Supreme Court. You know, there's just a sample. Those are pretty prominent people. You know, those aren't a bunch of stumble bums down on Skid Row getting fed nuns in the soup kitchen by the Christians now. Those are the movers and shakers in the world. Those are the guys that we all know and we all recognize. Now, these Khazars, a people of Turkish origin whose life and history are interwoven with the very beginnings of the history of the Jews of Russia. Historical evidence points to the region of the Urals as the home of the Khazars. The Khazars, who had been following a pagan and sex-oriented religion, had officially embraced Judaism in 740 AD, while rejecting Christianity and Mohammedism. The Jewish author and historian Arthur Koestler also concludes that the majority of Eastern Jews, and hence of world Jewry, is of Khazar. They are not of Semitic origin. In the beginning of his book, here's what Arthur Koestler states. A large majority of surviving Jews in the world is of Eastern European and thus perhaps mainly of Khazar origin. If so, this would mean that their ancestors came not from the Jordan, but from the Volga, not from Canaan, but from the Caucasus, and that genetically they are more closely related to the Hun, the Uyghur, the Magar tribes than to the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Koestler then devotes the remainder of his 255-page book to prove this premise. For instance, a record of a letter by a Khazar king shows that he traced his people to Noah's son Japheth, not to Shem, and to Japheth's grandson, Togarma, the ancestor of all of the Turkish tribes. The Khazar government was destroyed by the Slavs of Russia in 1016 AD. About 1200 AD, the land was invaded by the hordes of Genghis Khan. These two events caused large numbers of Khazars to migrate to Poland and Western Russia, forming the cradle of Western Jewish society. There is an abundance of ancient place names in the Ukraine and Poland which derive from Khazar. As the Khazars left their homeland in Khazaria and migrated north and west, they lost their name and became known as Jews. Their Yiddish language is not the language of the Israelites, which is Phoenician Greek style, but it is an amalgamation of Aramaic, medieval German, Slovak, and Russian dialects. The best historical evidence, therefore, shows that the Jews are not descended directly from the Israelites of the Bible, but they derive much of their ancestry from the Khazars and other people of Turkish Asiatic blood. And the Khazars are also of Edomite stock, and both stocks are made up of present-day Jews, as the historian H.G. Wells states. The Edomites were made Jews, and a Turkish people, Khazars, were mainly Jews in southern Russia. The main part of Jewry never was in Judea, and had never come out of Judea, according to the Jewish Encyclopedia. The original stock of the Khazars came from the land of Edom. Hasdi ibn Shuput, who was foreign minister to Ibed el-Rahman, Sultan of Cordova, in his letter to King Joseph of the Khazars about 960 A.D., speaks of the tradition according to which the Khazars once dwelt near the Seir Mountains. Now, the Seir Mountains are none other than the original land of Esau, Edom. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom, Genesis 36:8. Seir, S-E-I-R, was a mountain range south of the Dead Sea and was also known as the land of Edom in Genesis 36:21. The Seir Mountains were the home of the Edomites for nearly 1,000 years. Thus, it should be no surprise that migrants from that land would recall the name of their original homeland. Now, if the Khazars did originally dwell near the Seir Mountains, then the Khazars and thus world Jewry are racially of Edomite stock. But how and when did these Edomites get to Khazaria? Well, there's evidence that in the 6th century BC, some of the Edomites fled their homeland of Seir and migrated north. And after the fall of Jerusalem in 586 BC, the Edomites began to press northward. We see that in Ezekiel 36, verse 5. The extent and ultimate destination of this northward trek is not found in history, but it's likely that it brought some Edomites to the region of Khazaria. And the Edomites were also cast out of Palestine, and they were dispersed in different directions in 70 AD when the Romans sacked Jerusalem. So when dealing with a people of mixed racial heritage, it becomes a real quandary to ascertain their origin. The Jews of today are just such a people. In fact, the Jews themselves assert that they are, in fact, mongrels because of the original mixed ancestry of the Jews and their subsequent history of intermixture with every people among whom they have lived and continue to live. Now, the anthropologist Professor Carlton Kuhn has also demonstrated the admixture of the different Jewish types with other races. And he explains that while the Jews cannot be classed as a race per se, they are an ethnic group. The Jews form an ethnic group that, like all ethnic groups, they have their own racial elements distributed in their own proportions. And like all or most ethnic groups, they have their look, a part of their cultural heritage, that both preserves and expresses their cultural solidarity. They have developed a special racial subtype and a special pattern of facial and bodily expression. All right, so these people then that we call Edomites, Khazars, Jews today, are not exactly a racial type, but they are an ethnic group. Now, these people have been around for thousands and thousands of years. I mean, these are very important people in the international geopolitical scene on planet Earth today, and they have played an important role on the world stage over the thousands of years since they first appeared back in the days of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, these people are very, very important, just like the other three branches of the Jews. God himself has given them a role in international geopolitics. And now in the end time, right now, these people are going to rule the world. And boy, when they do, we are going to pay a price. This is the final act coming up. Final act is in process. And when this thing comes down in Matthew 24, the Messiah himself said that there's never been a time like it in all the history of the world. No, nor ever shall be again. He likens this to something worse than Noah's flood. Now, you have to imagine a little bit to figure out how this could be worse than Noah's flood, which left only 8 people alive on the planet. He says this thing is going to dwarf that. It's going to be worse. I'm not exactly sure how or why, but it's not going to be pretty. Now, there's a lot of people here that have had a lot to do with the Jewish people in the world, and we started off early on in the series, and I gave you a quotation from Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin. Now, I've showed you what Jesus had to say about him, and none of it was good. And we've been taking a look here at the history of these people, and we can identify them. They are descended from Eber. They're Hebrew. They were born from Isaac. They are a part and parcel of the Semitic stock that's descended from Shem. And they should be. They are, in fact, our uncle. Looking at it, you know, from the perspective of a family, and our side of the family is descended from Jacob, and that's Jacob's brother. Now, our daddy Jacob screwed Esau out of his birthright, and the descendants of Esau haven't forgot it from that day to this, and they're going to take it out of our hide. Now, they wouldn't take it out of our hide if we would obey God and keep His commandments, but we gave our God the finger, and our God says, well, okay, I'm going to let your Uncle Esau at you and wait until he gets through with you. And boy, when our Uncle Esau gets through with us, that isn't going to be very pretty. They got a plan over here. They say, we're not going to allow any religion except our own. So you Christians over there, if you think you're going to practice Christianity under this Khazar rule, you got another guess coming. You're going to sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. Now, you could do that with your God and do it voluntarily. You haven't. You're probably not going to. But when these guys take over, it's going to be you do it or die, and I suspect that, you know, that's the way that's going to come down. But listen, as this program progressed along through history over here, there's been a lot said by others in history concerning the Jews. The Jews have been thrown out of every country in Europe. Every country in Europe at some point in time has expelled the Jews from within their border, put reservations upon them. Let's take our break here and we'll come back and I'll show you what some of these reservations are. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and download the free General Law CD package right there. These sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Jesus and the Pharisees. Now, in addition to Jesus and his comments here in the scripture that we've been talking about, what world-famous men have had to say about the Jews? And so I opened this dialogue here, I think in the first program, and I said, here's what Ben Franklin said. Now, Ben Franklin must have been clued in. Somebody must have educated him. He must have been taught and trained by his daddy, or somebody along the line said, well, let me tell you about these Jewish people. I don't think Ben Franklin knew about the Germans, about the Ferrer's line, or the Ferrer's line, that's Ferrer's or Zara, or about the Schiele line. But he knew from world history, he knew from experience, he knew from history that these people had some problems where they had been located before. And he said, these people don't assimilate into the native population, they don't marry into this population, and they don't to this day. Jews that marry outside of Jewish families, they're ostracized. You Christians can't go over to Israel with your missionaries and proselyte over there. They don't allow it. Now, the Jews are free to proselyte here. They don't spend much time doing that. They're not trying to convert you Christians into their camp. You have to be born into Orthodox Judaism. They don't want outsiders in there. That's why they don't want to marry with you people. They are strict segregationists. Now, they preach integration, but they practice strict segregation. Now, what they do, they create race hatred. Listen to this. A world coalition of Gentiles could cope with us temporarily, but we're assured against this by roots of dissension among them so deep that they cannot be torn out. We have created antagonism between the personal and the national interests of the Gentiles by arousing religious and race hatreds, which we have nourished in their hearts for 20 centuries. Isn't that special? When we become rulers, they tell us, we shall regard as undesirable the existence of any religion except our own. Proclaiming one God with whom our fate is tied as the chosen people, and by whom our fate has been made one with the fate of the world. For this reason, we must destroy all other religions. If thereby should emerge contemporary atheists, then as a transition step, this will not interfere with our aims. Hey, these guys are going to destroy every religion. You Muslims are out. Buddhists, Shintoists, Christians, you're out. Well, that's what they tell you. To wear everyone out by dissension, animosity, feuds, famine, inoculation of diseases, and want, until the Gentiles see no other way of escape except an appeal to our money and our power. We will force up wages which will be of no benefit to workers, for we at the same time will cause the rise in the prices of prime necessities. Pretending that this is due to a decline of agriculture and of cattle raising, will also artfully and deeply undermine the sources of production by instilling in the workmen ideas of anarchy and encourage them in the use of alcohol, at the same time taking measures to drive all of the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. We're going to encourage them in the use of alcohol. You wonder why we have such a drug problem? Do you wonder why we are being invaded by millions of Mexicans across the border? I mean, there isn't any reason, logic, or common sense between a nation going into drug drug abuse into becoming drug-addicted people. There isn't any reason for you to open your borders and let everybody come in here and take your property. That's what you're doing, but there isn't any reason, logic, or common sense behind it. Unless you're Uncle Esau. And Uncle Esau, he has an agenda. His agenda is to destroy the United States of America. Now, he's already taken you captive. He's just in the process of mopping up. And you Canadians up there, now, you know, when they take care of us, they'll be right up there after you. And down in Australia and New Zealand, wake up and smell the coffee. Once the nuclear umbrella is removed, your enemies are going to move in on you. Now, our triumph has been rendered easier by the fact that in our relations with the men whom we wanted, we have always worked upon the most sensitive chords of the human mind. Upon the cash account, upon the cupidity, upon the insatiability for material needs of man. And each one of these human weaknesses taken alone is sufficient to paralyze initiative, for it hands over the will of men to the disposition of him who has bought their activities. They're not hiding it from you. We just go out here and bribe them. Campaign contributions is what we call it in this country. It's just rampant bribery. Nothing more, nothing less. And we go in here, you know, the big manufacturing companies and the big industries, they just go into the Congress and pass out campaign contributions. In this upcoming election, they're spending billions of dollars to elect people that they want in office to create the laws that they want enacted. So you're not going to shut off the border, and you're not going to shut off the drugs. The people that want the drugs to flow across the border, that want to disrupt your society, that want to destroy your nation, destroy your economy, they're already in control. They're in the process of doing that. That's our Uncle Esau. Now you know who it is. Now, world-famous men have had things to say about the Jews. You know, people in places of power and position, you know, guys like Martin Luther. You've heard the name Martin Luther, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Peter Stuyvesant, Thomas Jefferson, Winston Churchill. Would you like to know what Winston Churchill had to say about Jews? Now, Winston Churchill was the Prime Minister of Great Britain during the war. He was again elected Prime Minister in the 1950s. Well, Winston Churchill, the British politician, in 1920 he wrote a long newspaper article on the recent Bolshevik seizure of Russia. After praising what he called the national Jews of Russia, he said, "In violent opposition to all this sphere of Jewish effort rise the schemes of the international Jews. The adherents of this sinister confederacy are mostly men reared up among the unhappy populations of countries where Jews are persecuted on account of their race. Most, if not all of them, have forsaken the faith of their forefathers and divorced from their minds all spiritual hopes of the next world. This movement among the Jews is not new. From the days of Spartacus Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx and down to Trotsky in Russia, Bela Kun in Hungary, Rosa Luxemburg in Germany, and Emma Goldman in the United States, this worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and for the reconstitution of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence and impossible equality, has been steadily growing, and it played, as a modern writer, Mrs. Webster, has ably shown, a definitely recognizable part in the tragedy of the French Revolution. It has been the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century. And now, at last, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworlds of the great cities of Europe and America have gripped the Russian people by the hair of their heads, and they have become practically the undisputed masters of that enormous empire. There is no need to exaggerate the part played in the creation of Bolshevism and in the actual bringing about of the Russian Revolution by these international and, for the most part, atheistical Jews. It is certainly a very great one. It probably outweighs all others. With the notable exception of Lenin, the majority of the leading figures are Jews. Moreover, the principle, inspiration, and driving power comes from the Jewish leaders. In the Soviet institutions, the predominance of Jews is even more astounding, and the prominent, if not the principal part, in the system of terrorism applied by the extraordinary commissions for combating counter-revolution has been taken by Jews, and in some notable cases, by Jewesses. The same evil prominence was obtained by Jews in the brief period of terror during which Bela Kun ruled in Hungary. The same phenomenon has been presented in Germany, especially in Bavaria. So far as this madness has been allowed to prey upon the temporary prostration of the German people, and although in all of these countries there are many non-Jews every whit as bad as the worst of the Jewish revolutionaries, the part played by the latter in proportion to their numbers in the population is astonishing. Zionism versus Bolshevism, a struggle for the soul of the Jewish people, illustrated Sunday Herald, London, February 8, 1920. That's what Winston Churchill said about the Bolshevik Revolution. He said, listen to his words again, Winston Churchill said that the part played by the latter in proportion to their numbers in the population is astonishing. We're just talking about a very small minority of people who have succeeded in infiltrating the government, the economics, and the social fabric of a society, of a nation. You see, once they have taken over your news media, they will tell you what it is they want you to know. Once they have taken over your entertainment media, they will entertain you with the propaganda that they want you to see and hear. Once they have taken over your political institutions, once they have taken over your educational institutions, they will teach you what they want you to know, and then they will guide you into the political conclusion that you have now wrapped yourselves up in the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. We have the exact government in place that was programmed for us in our public schools. The reason that we Americans have turned into socialists, communists, and fascists is because it's the only thing we know. That's what we've been educated to. Let me give you an illustration. Do you practice communism? Are you a communist? You know, when I walk into a classroom or I walk into a seminar and I say, how many communists do we have here tonight? Nobody raises their hands. Americans don't see themselves as communists. And then I ask them, well, how many of you people in here send your children to public school? And everybody raises their hands. How many of you have attended public school? Everybody raises their hands. Oh, it's true. Once in a while, you'll find some homeschool guy in there that doesn't raise his hand, but he's 1 in 100. I say, how many of you people in here pay income tax? And everybody raises their hands. How many of you people have a bank account, use credit cards, or use paper money to buy, sell, and trade with? Everybody raises their hands. How many of you people have a social security number? Everybody raises their hands. I say, don't you know the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto? That banking, central banks, credit cards, and fiat currency is the fifth plank? Social security is the eighth plank? Public education is the tenth plank? That's 40% of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, children. You could say, well, I'm just a 40% communist then. Then I go through the other six planks and ask these people, is that what you're practicing? Is that what you do where you live? They answer all of them. Here in America, we practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto from the time we're born to the day we die. And so do all the rest of you people out there in the world. We're not practicing the Ten Commandments. We're practicing the 10 planks. Now, if that's what you wanted to do, well, that's fine. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But if, on the other hand, that's a surprise to you, and you're saying, well, I didn't intend to do that, neither did I. And one day I said, well, that's what I'm doing. Now, in this introduction, there's a book here called The World Famous, or What World Famous Men Said About the Jews. It's an introduction by Dr. E.R. Fields. I think the introduction is well worthwhile. He says, the Jews are the only people in the world who have found hostility in every country in which they settled in any numbers. And the big question is why? You know, Italians came here to America. Poles, Hungarians, English, Irish. You know, people have come from all over the world here to the United States. And you don't find the kind of problem or the animosity that you find against Jews. Why is that? Today it's taught in the schools that anti-Semitism began in Germany in the 1930s, after which they were deported. What is not studied is the fact that at one time or another the Jews have been expelled from every nation in Europe. When the Jews first began to immigrate to America, the early colonists in New York, Charleston, and Savannah tried to ban their entry. Benjamin Franklin pleaded with the members of the Continental Congress to enter a specific ban against Jewish immigration into the U.S. Constitution and to bar them for all time to come. Now, the Jews claim that they're only a religion. The truth is that the Jews are a race, and less than 30% are members of any synagogue. So whether they're Orthodox, religious, atheists, capitalists, or communists, they still claim to be Jews, members of the Jewish race. Every race has inherited traits. And in the case of the Jews, they include trading money, changing or charging usury and loathing for productive labor, which is scorned as beneath the dignity of the Jews in their Bible called the Talmud. Jews do not work. You're not going to find any Jewish plumbers, carpenters, electricians. The Jews are in banking. They're in law. 70% of Jews go to college. They're all professionals. They're in real estate, buying, selling, and trading real estate, which is prohibited in Leviticus 25:23. They're in banking. That's prohibited. Usury is a byproduct of banking. That's prohibited. They use unjust weights and balances. That's prohibited in Leviticus 19:35 and 36. Every criminal activity in every one of these professions, every profession, boys and girls, is a criminal activity. It violates the law of God. There are no lawful biblical professions. None. Zero. Zilch. Doesn't exist. Common law occupations, we got lots of those. Professions, none. All of the professions are licensed, and all of the professions are criminal activities. Every one of them. Lawyers, criminal activity. Banking, criminal activity. Preaching, criminal activity. And on it goes. Now, the Jews have not changed since the days when Jesus Christ took up a whip and drove the money changers out of the temple. Jews have always united to form monopolies. Today, they control all of the department store chains and specialty shops, along with the lucrative jewelry and animal fur trade. Jews dominate the fields of all precious metals, such as gold, silver, platinum, tin, and lead. They will always band together to drive Gentile competitors out of the marketplace and out of the business. Today, America is being flooded with Jewish immigrants from Russia. And even 20,000 per year leave Israel for the United States, all with dollar signs in their eyes. Jews have used their vaunted money power to seize control of the Democratic Party and constitute over 50% of all of its financial contributions. Today, they are buying up more and more major U.S. companies, and while only 3% of the population, the Jews control 25% of the nation's wealth, and this percentage rises every year. They are the only racial group totally organized to work for political domination over America. Opposition to the Jews did not begin in Germany, but it dates back before the birth of Christ more than 2,000 years ago. Study the statements made by the world's greatest men. They reveal why the wandering Jew has made enemies out of every host country that has ever accepted them. Every country in the world, every single country, has expelled the Jews once or more. In fact, here in the American colonies, we did it. In two colonies. Virginia was one of them. I think Rhode Island was the other. Cicero, Marcus Cicero, 1st B.C., Roman statesman and writer, he said, "Softly, softly, I want none but the judges to hear me. The Jews have already gotten me into a fine mess, as they have many other and another gentleman. I have no desire to furnish further grist for their mills." That was the oration in defense of Flaccus. Cicero was serving as defense counsel at the trial of one Flaccus, a Roman official who interfered with Jewish gold shipments to their international headquarters, then as now in Jerusalem. Cicero himself certainly was not a nobody, and for one of his stature to have to speak softly shows that he was in the presence of a dangerously powerful sphere of influence. And on another occasion, Cicero wrote, "The Jews belong to a dark and repulsive force. One knows how numerous this clique is, how they stick together, and what power they exercise through their unions. They are a nation of rascals and deceivers." 1st B.C., Roman statesman Cicero. Here's what he had to say. He's a first-hand observer, and he's not a lightweight in the political institution of Rome of his day. Roman statesman. Now, that's pretty significant. A guy by the name of Seneca, first century Roman philosopher, said the customs of that most criminal nation have gained such strength that they have now been received in all lands. The conquered have given laws to the conquerors. Isn't that special? Well, that's what's happened in America. These people have conquered America. They have taken over without any bullets, without any blood. You got to give credit where credit's due, and we, you and I, are the proximate cause of our own injury. We will not obey the laws of our God. And so now he has sold us into slavery to our enemies. And boy, this is a bad enemy to have. This is the guy that, remember, we stole his birthright from. And he's not going to forget that. He hasn't forgot it. And he's going to take his pound of flesh, and he's going to take it right out of our hide. Hey, I'm about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder, and we'll close this out next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.